Greetings and welcome to Edgy Ideas, the podcast that explores what it means to live the good life and create the good society in our disruptive age. My name is Simon Western, and I will be talking to invited guests about diverse topics, exploring social conscious and unconscious dynamics and desires. Edgy Ideas is proudly sponsored by the Eco Leadership Institute. We offer coach and leadership training courses, and we have a vibrant community of practice where international members join once a month for a webinar. Our focus is on co-creating the good society. To find out more, go to www.ecoleadershipinstitute.org, and to read my polemic blogs and essays, go to Simon Western at Substack. Thank you for listening. Welcome to this edition of Edgy Ideas Podcast. Today, my very special guest is Daria Kuznetsova. Daria is a humanitarian professional with over a decade of experience, and she's led multi-partner portfolios in Ukraine where she lives. Following the full-scale invasion, Daria played a key role in scaling up humanitarian efforts, managing projects funded by the EU and the US aid, amongst others. Daria currently oversees a portfolio of more than 100 partnerships, and her focus is on strategic development, mentoring, and fostering impactful change within organizations and communities. Dasha, you're very welcome to Edgy Ideas Podcast. How are you today?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Simon, for the invitation. I'm currently in Kyiv, so my big and warm hi to everyone, and especially you and your team. Thanks for inviting me. It is a pleasure, actually, to share my experience or some stories that I have also.
Yeah, just for the audience to know, I'm Dasha in Northern Ireland. We ran an experiential workshop, and we had 50 people from the north of Ireland, from the Republic of Ireland, and from Ukraine and from Poland. And it was a very special experience. People went through a big emotional journey. It was in a beautiful place, Corrymeela, which is a peace center in Northern Ireland. And we met, and since then I've done a bit of coaching with Dasha. And I'm very interested in the question of what it feels like, what the experiences of living in a war zone. Because in the West here, like in England and in Ireland, we get the news, we hear the stories. I had two Ukrainians living with us for a year in the house. So we kind of feel the emotions of it, but I think it'd be very interesting just to hear your experience and the experience of what you observe around you. So do you want to share something of your experience of living in Kyiv at this moment in time?
Yes, sure. It's not like I'm from Kyiv originally. I'm originally from the eastern part of Ukraine, actually bordering and connecting to Russian Federation. So meaning that all my childhood, you know, I was living with the neighbor that now we're in a war, even, of course, never expected that it might happen. So I moved to Kyiv actually during the COVID time. Before that, I was living in Donetsk region, but I'm originally from Lugansk region. So as of now, the full Lugansk region is occupied by Russia, and half of Donetsk region is also occupied, meaning that I could not visit my home. I could not visit my apartment or some, you know, relatives that are still there. That's why, of course, all this topic is quite hard and difficult. Plus, I think it has some layers because here in Ukraine, like we used to have, right, 24 regions and Crimea, and each year we're having less and less. So I think it's also the nature of acceptance that the Ukraine that I was born in and the current state, it's two different mode of state, I would say, right? Because the geographical borders change, we are change, our environment has changed, so a lot of changes, and some people might accept it and some not. So it is a question, of course, like what we're up to and what we are fighting for. That's why I personally having this experience like living in war, because I think when for some part of Ukrainians, the war started with a full invasion in 2022. For another part of Ukraine, Ukrainian people, it started from 2014. Yeah. And I was at that part in Donetsk because I have moved from Lugansk region to Donetsk and was studying there. And I was dreaming to live in Donetsk and have family. So I finished my university and actually started to work in university. Mm-hmm. At that time, it was my first job. So I was looking for, you know, new adventures. But my adventure came up to the unpredictable circumstances, which I think no one was expected at that time. Yeah, in 2014, after Maidan happened in Kyiv, another, you know, action across the different region happened. And in a few months, we have already the militaries and people armed groups in Donetsk city. In summer, like in May, June, we decided to leave the city because it was already very unsafe. Like many of people from East, we not moved to the western part of Ukraine. We moved to Crimea because it was at that time not very strong, I would say, division line. So you might cross the border. And after that, we spent like 1 month and came back to Donetsk region and back to home, actually. So everyone thought that maybe it will be last like 3 months and it will be finished. But now, since 11 years, it's not finished. And I don't have illusions that it will finish like in 3 months. So not anymore. Of course, I understand that it's a quite long process. And when you have now so many energy in this process, because it's now discussed even at global level.
Yeah.
That's why we see there are a lot of developments now with the new administration of US. But even if it will not be that one, we would have some, of course, changes. It's possible because we have resource limits, we have, you know, some economic shutdowns and other factors. So it could not be also last forever.
Sure, sure.
But it is also, you know, the game that you don't know the result. But yeah. I think if we come to the more human level orientation, it is, of course, like a lot of destruction and changes that sometimes your brain even could not oversee or digest. That's why war, I think everyone will define differently for themselves. For me personally, maybe 5 years of the beginning of war was the field of creativity, of opportunity, of responding to those who might need more support and assistance. And probably that's why I overtook this role. And I never was experienced in NGO sector. So I applied for one NGO, and in a month I started to work, get knowledge about international standards, international humanitarian assistance. These words now mean a lot for me because I think at that time it really plays a crucial for majority of people along the line. And you know, in COVID time, when it was some reduction of all the programming and more responding to health, I was asking myself, what could be my next level? What should I start to prepare for? And because probably humanitarian assistance, because it was frozen, the border of occupied and non-occupied territories was frozen. Not much action was during the COVID. And I thought that probably it is a time actually to start thinking about something new. And in 22, we had invasion. I think, you know, like previous 3 years actually showed me that probably all of us from the eastern Ukraine actually were preparing, you know, some potential actually to respond to such massive aggression.
Yeah.
And with such knowledge, with such human resources, with such skills, more or less the response was quite huge and big.
Yeah.
And it was the power to support people, of course.
Yeah, let me stop you. I mean, you've just described a huge journey, and a journey from being displaced from your home, where your territory has been occupied, where you're separated from your family, and you've gone quite quickly into your response and the creativity. And it was amazing, you and other people. Like, I'm really quite moved by the experience of what happened and the Polish NGOs who helped kind of a million refugees. And, you know, it's very, very impressive and quite moving, as I say. What over that period has it been like emotionally to kind of manage that, you know, the knowledge that there's cities being destroyed, there's people dying, you're probably not going to be able to return to your home for the foreseeable future anyway. How do you kind of manage that, do you think? What's your experience of that?
Yeah, you know, I like my mom words, but there are some technique also connected to that. So even if you're stuck or you don't know what to do, just do a little step like ahead, right? So I think when I start to remember myself in those period, I don't know why, but even without like war experience, I somehow accumulated all the energy and all of my physical probably state to find the way to going out from this. Yeah. So I think first it was some kind of concentration on some small result, at least, you know. Another, it was that I was open for new, because I understand that all my background, because I was, you know, exploring economic dynamics in our region and how it is connected to labor market. So all of that was ruined, you know, in one day.
Yeah.
So, and I was just trying to understand how I could apply my knowledge to current situation. And it was a very good case when at my birthday in February, my husband, he took me to the last bus, I guess, because it was 2015. And he said, Dasha, now it's really unsafe in the city. You really need to leave. He couldn't leave for some the family issue, but you need to go. And because my university was relocated to Kyiv, so I decided at least 1 month maybe to spend in Kyiv and go to work, actually, because I still have a job. So we came to Kyiv from Donetsk to Kyiv. So it was a bus. Could you imagine? Now we don't have such directions, right? So I came to Kyiv, and I think on the week, like a third or fourth, I already decided that I couldn't live anymore in Kyiv. Because people who was not experiencing war and all, you know, what's happening around, they were not connected. So I was not connected to them also. And I couldn't I was not part of this community. And I applied to the job and actually come back to Donetsk and start my new occupation, like new, you know, world, I would say, in humanitarian projects. And it really saves my life, I think, at some point, because I felt that my support would be needed. And it's not only about me, but also to my family, because, you know, when the war started, probably you also heard that a lot of families who were between borders, they fall apart or they start to be disconnected due to the political changes, you know. So they broke up. Some pairs broke up because of the discussion. And I think for me was also, you know, motivation to understand what it is really going on.
Yeah.
And to try to keep this balance with my family and friends, or at least maybe to create the new like circle also, because a lot of people who understand that they could not live in such condition, they left, of course, the area.
Yeah, I mean, many left. You've chosen to stay, which is a choice people make. You just said that work and contributing maybe saved your life, that like it. And that's important for people to understand, you know, that in a desperate situation, the fact that you can contribute to do something
meaningful
and towards helping others gives an anchor when your emotions and your you see lots of destruction.
Yeah, and I started to work with psychologists. And, you know, we start also to discuss what it is stress and what is the response to the stress. And of course, all the info was new for me. But I do remember, you know, that there are different behavior on the stress, right? You could pause, you could respond, or you could freeze. So probably I am from those type of the people who really need to act. Yeah. Because if I will act, you know, I feel myself. If I get stuck or something, it feels for me also, it could happen, but I am more proactive person. So probably, you know, another step or another side of the war is to actually explore yourself. Because I think if it's not these circumstances, I would probably experience other. But anyway, all of that give me thoughts that to live now in unpredictable world, right, you really need to understand yourself. So all of that, it's actually self-awareness and what the feeling and emotion about. So it really actually, it will drive you anyway somehow in different period of time. But for me, it was, 10 years, like 11 years ago, really the core moment.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's interesting. Many listeners will know I lost a son. He was murdered in a knife attack, and you know that smashes your life. It really smashes your life. And I look back at that time and wonder how I survived the trauma of it and the grief. And I was very grateful that I'd done a lot of work on myself. I spent years, you know, in the world of therapy as a family therapist and a psychotherapist, and the knowledge that I wasn't going crazy, the knowledge that this was a grieving process, it gave me some anchor points to understand myself and to work through this long process, which you never actually complete. It's still with you. But that kind of self-knowledge, when you hit a crisis, whether it's war or personal trauma, is very, very helpful. I think it kind of, for me, it was a salvation moment. I used to go to the doctor and he used to tell me that, you need antidepressants, Simon. And I say, no, I don't need antidepressants. I'm grieving. This is different. I don't want to cover this up with antidepressants. This is something I need to process and work through. And he was like worried about me self-harming or suicide. And I said, no, I have some thoughts, but I'm okay. I'll work through this. And if I get really worried, I come back to you. Don't worry. I said, I'm okay with this. I was reassuring my doctor.
Yes.
But that self-knowledge is really important. One thing I noticed in when we were in Northern Ireland together was there is people from the north of Ireland, very experienced people. Some of them had lived through the trauma and the troubles of the wars of Northern Ireland. And the word disassociation comes to me that a lot of people found it initially quite difficult to connect with yourself and others who kind of came from this war zone. It was they were very caught up in their own stories and their own cultures. I think that changed towards the end of the week together. But and I remember when we said goodbye, and I watched your Ukrainian group get on the bus and travel away from us, and I felt deeply, deeply moved. And it was this moment of like when I was running that experience or workshop, it was taking on a lot of emotions of people and dealing with a lot. And it was like when you're in the moment, you disassociate from the reality in a sense, what's going on. And then when I saw you leaving, I got very in touch with, well, okay, I'm going home to a nice safe home in Galway with my family, and these people are going on a bus ride to wherever, get a flight to Warsaw, and then a 13, 14-hour journey back to Kyiv, back into a war zone. And it really hit me, like, you know, that. But I just wonder about this notion of disassociation, how, like, even living in Kyiv, how you kind of, you almost have to disassociate to survive at some stages to keep work going. And can you say something about your experience of that and what you see around you?
Yeah, thanks, Simon. I think, you know, you shared your story and, you know, all these traumas that we have during the life. And you said also that the grief, you know, I think that, you know, in Ukraine society, it's now no time, or I also read somewhere, no luxury being tired or no luxury like being, you know, grieved or something. Of course, it's very individual that you could come to some of the state, you know, and you could feel sensitive. But I'm not sure like whether we have such spaces, safe spaces to be such sensitive, because all the atmosphere around is that we're resilient and we could take more. But sometimes I think it's overestimation.
Yeah.
And you know, even the first year of invasion, I do remember that everyone worked like 12 hours or 14 hours a day.
Mm.
One of my friends in government state, I asked, like, what was the last time that you take actually day off, or you had like Saturday or Sunday as a off? For them, it was even probably the first year, it was without off at all.
Mm.
And I was really, you know, surprised negatively, because I don't know how people could actually, you know, obtain all the information and still continue doing their, you know, jobs. And of course, how mentally it would impact on their daily life, etc. That's why I think it was really difficult between 23-24, when it was already the third year of invasion, when all the emotions start to really take us down. And it was really felt in a society because everyone was so tired. I think the issue is that we like in a marathon, and you don't know when you could stop or pause.
Yes, yeah.
And it is a question, because sometimes you just need to personally decide for yourself.
Yeah, and sometimes stopping or pausing is dangerous in the sense that you can get flooded, you can get overwhelmed by the emotion. Like if you keep going, then that's one thing, you know, and you get tired, you get exhausted, and you get bad tempered, or you have, you know, experience. But to stop, sometimes it can flood you with emotion. So yeah, it's a difficult choice to make.
I do remember that because I think the first 5 years from 14th, I didn't take any leave. So I was really involved in few projects. I was full of energy. I don't know. I think, you know, when I come in back, I'm like, oh, it's completely other Dasha. Of course, now I am more wise, I would say, you know, because I don't have to choose between like, so many choices, plus experience give me some also the powers. But I do remember that I took 1 week or 2 weeks and went home to my mom, to Lugansk region. And I couldn't sleep 3 days.
Yeah.
So I lost my sleep because I was not sure what to do with the free time. I think my brain and some anxiety was such, you know, in the peak position that I couldn't just barely, you know, fall asleep. So, of course, I came to the doctor at that time and asked for help, because it was for sure unhealthy.
Yeah.
So I think, yes, the first skill for in wartime is that you need to really understand your body and feel it. So because if it really hurt, you need to go to doctor and ask for help. Because in our culture, again, you know, to ask for help, sometimes it's very stereotypically hard, because,
yes,
you know, we are a strong nation and everyone deals with the problem. But now I think it's a little bit shifting.
Mm.
But yeah, I think it's really about, you know, feeling yourself and ask a question or ask for help if needed.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's very helpful. Just take a breath and think about, is there anything else you would like to share about your experience or the experience of other Ukrainians going through this, which we haven't discussed?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think I have really a lot of interesting insights during this decade. But what I want to share is like what I have learned so far is that it's very hard for me to share one opinion.
Uh-huh.
Because when we talk about some group or some community, I also understand that it's quite a diverse, you know,
yeah,
group or entity with my analytical, you know, background. I started to also divide and see some piece of that. So that's why, you know, when you will ask me, Dasha, how the people now, you know, or I like live in war, I start to think, who are those people you're asking?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or war, what does it mean, war now? So I start, you know, to repack all of these pieces. And I really understand that Ukraine is quite a big country. And, you know, front line, the central park, the western, more a safer zone, it is completely different experience that people overcome. That's why when I'm now living in Kyiv and understand that, of course, it is a capital of country, it is another, let's say, attitude, not towards the others. But meanwhile, it's just ordinary people who also experience war, and they could come to this sensitivity also. They could come to the states that they couldn't understand, or maybe at some point we start to share, you know, that we just want to pause, want, you know, to discuss not only the war, but actually how to live after the war. You know, I think such discussion is quite helpful because we build our narratives on the past.
Yes.
But it's such a difficult because now we mostly, you know, operating on these basic needs.
Yes. Yeah.
So to build the future, it's like really overstressing for yourself because you kind of lose, you know, energy on daily life because you like in survival mode. But to relax and to just imagine that at some point the war could be over, what the society we could create, et cetera, it really would require, you know, like a shift in your reality.
Yeah.
And maybe some external support. I could never, you know, think that it also would be helpful.
Yeah, no, I'm hoping that when the war does finish, and I do hope it does finish for everybody soon, that we can offer some support and come and visit you and others in Kyiv and support you in that rebuilding and but I understand that now is the time for survival rather than planning a bright future. But that's good.
Yeah, because just a small comment, because, you know, even let's say for psychological support, right? Yeah. If you feel some anxiety or, you know, vulnerability, etc., you want to discuss. My first rule was when we start actually to look for the projects where psychologists could help another people, that the person itself should be in a safe zone to support us. So now in Ukraine, actually, to find a resourceable and, you know, kind of in resource psychologist, those who live in a safe zone, it's a big question also. Yeah, so probably it could be just representative for who left Ukraine, but provide the services outside.
Sure. Sure. Is there anything you want to ask me, Dasha, before we come to an end of this podcast?
I mean, I have a lot of questions, Simon, but I understand there are some limits. So probably due to your wide experience and also the grant of the war and conflict around, how you see that the community could deal with the crisis? What could be, what for you, 3 key, you know, stones, or like it could be less or it could be more, but key elements to actually unite community to overcome the crisis?
Yeah, I wish I had 3 bullet point answers. I don't, but I do, you know, the work we tried to do in Northern Ireland was, we called it collaborative leadership to build a better civil society. And I think that underpins like the work at the Eco Leadership Institute we try and do. It's why you're on here today, to try and, it's like trying to develop better understandings of different people in different places. It's trying to build mutual communities where mutualism is very important, where we don't just impose one view. I think you just said even in Ukraine, there's a very diverse ways of experiencing, very, very diverse experiences. So, I mean, for me, it's getting some fundamentals right about building civil society and what that means. And that means building communities, making connections and reaching out to kind of those we consider other, finding a space for dialogue. All these things are part of building civil society. I mean, my thoughts are that like Ukraine is an extreme example. It's in a war zone, but this is probably the most fundamental thing needed in wider society. You know, even in non-war zones, it's like how there's great divides in society at the moment. There's great kind of people with wealth and in poverty. There's kind of political, cultural divides. So there's all this splitting going on. And I think we all have to kind of harness our energies and try and create a good society. And my final question to you is, it's like, from your experience, what do you think it means to live a good life and create a good society from your lived experience?
Yeah, good life. I wish. But yeah, on the way. I think, you know, if it's not was this short term, because I calculated the third part of my life I live in war. And I think from my childhood, I really love to watch different, you know, Soviet or old movies, but not only about war. So yes. Unfortunately, my habits and expectation was ruined in 2014. So the good life for me is to feel your society, to be open, and I think to create the safe space for diversity. Because yes. What I really afraid is that in our community now, we could now choose the way of radicalism mm-hmm. and this really radical Ukrainian nation something.
Yes. Yeah.
So I would really avoid to go on that direction, but it really require safety.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, safety, freedom to speak and to listen, and diversity, yeah, to accept diversity in whatever way it could be, meaning that the different people, different minorities could express their values, could express their voice, and it would not be harmed for them.
Mm-hmm.
And your question was about good life and...
A good society, what it means to live in a good society.
Good society. I mean, you know, I don't have much illusion that it could be ideal.
Sure.
So I would not expect that good society is ideal society. I think the good society for me is the society who could leave the crisis together, so they could support each other, and they could do some lessons learned together, so actually practically imply it after.
Sure.
And not, you know, probably the most difficult part just to take on the latest and try to forget. No, I think what would make us more wider adaptive is actually to provide those opportunity to overcome together with all these challenges. It will make us stronger, and the trust would be rebuilt in that way. Especially in our culture, I think, you know, such practices should also be somehow come so people could really try it, because without it, it's very hard to understand what do we need.
Sure. Dasha, thank you very much for being our guest on Edge Ideas. It's been really lovely talking with you. We wish you very well. We wish everyone in Kyiv and Ukraine very well. We pray for peace. Go well and stay in touch. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Simon. And I wish we will see each other somehow in Kyiv.
I hope so too. Take care.
Goodbye.
And just to say to the listeners, we've been talking about coaching. We are actually running a critical coaching program starting in September. It's a diploma, accredited. If you're interested, get in touch with the Eco Leadership Institute. Thanks for listening.